rest of the headlines. Palestinian resistance forces fire hundreds of rockets at Israeli targets. Retaliation for the recent Israeli aggression that has claimed more than 20 Palestinian lives so far. Top diplomats from Iran, Syria, Russia, and Turkey are meeting in Moscow to discuss Syria-related issues. And Pakistan's former premier Imran Khan is remanded in custody for 8 days, while nationwide protests demanding his release continue for a second day. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Muse. Thanks for joining us. Israel continues to rain down bombs on the Gaza Strip for the second day in a row. Smoke billowed from the besieged Palestinian territory as Israel hit targets. The regime says it struck rocket launching infrastructure held by the Islamic Jihad resistance movement. Palestinian health officials say several people in Gaza have been killed in the fresh raids. The regime started its attacks on the Gaza Strip on Tuesday. Since then, over 20 Palestinians have been killed, including 3 senior members of the Islamic Jihad. Dozens of people have also been injured. Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance fighters in the Gaza Strip have hit back at Israel's aerial strikes in the besieged territory. Palestinians returned fire by launching hundreds of rockets from Gaza City toward Israeli targets. The retaliatory attacks set off sirens in and around Tel Aviv and prompted residents to seek shelter. The Israeli military claims it has intercepted the rockets. Local media, however, report that a home was hit in the town of Sderot. The Islamic Jihad resistance movement had vowed to respond to Israel's deadly strikes on the Gaza Strip on Tuesday.
Israeli warplanes carried out a series of airstrikes at Pirah on Tuesday, which resulted in the death of 3 high-profile military commanders of the Islamic Jihad movement, Tariq Izzeddin, Khalil al-Bahdini, and Jihad al-Ghanim. The Ministry of Health confirmed the death of 13 Palestinians altogether, including women and children, among them the wives and children of the Islamic Jihad commanders. 20 others were also injured, some of them in serious condition. The Israeli airstrikes, which targeted the middle of the Gaza City and Rafah and Khan Yunis in the southern of the coastal enclave, caused a great destruction of the residential apartment buildings as well.
I was asleep, and suddenly the explosion broke out and the rubble fell on us. My granddaughter was asleep by my side. We both woke up, not able to see anything from the destruction.
The Israeli occupation has a record in killing Palestinian civilians, children and women. Today, Maya Ezzedine and Haja al-Bahdani, 2 Palestinian girls, the daughters of the Islamic Jihad leaders, fell victim to the Israeli attacks, like the other thousands of innocent children that were killed before.
Palestinian resistance movements have mourned the martyrs and the family members and condemned the Israeli assassination. In several statements released, they have warned the Israeli occupying regime of the scale and the scope of the Palestinian response to the crime.
The Israeli assassination of the Al-Quds Brigade's commanders is going to cost the Israeli occupation a heavy price. It is a legitimate right to fight the Israeli occupation, and it's the resistance's duty to defend the Palestinian people against any Israeli aggression.
The heinous atrocity of the Israeli occupation that resulted in the assassination of 3 senior leaders of the Islamic Jihad movement and other civilians will see the Palestinian resistance factions unite in their crushing response as usual. We have the right to resist the Israeli occupation as it continues to commit war crimes against our people.
Thousands of Palestinians carried the bodies of the martyrs from the hospital to the Grand Al-Umari Mosque and then to the final destination to bury them in the northern Gaza Strip. Thousands of Palestinians took to the streets to express their anger over the Israeli crime that resulted in the death of innocent women and children. Palestinians are now calling for retaliation. The Palestinian resistance factions are now preparing for a crushing response to the Israeli attack and the assassination of the Islamic Jihad commanders, affirming their unity against the regime. Ulal Asi, Gaza.
Just a quick update on our piece of news that we ran in the headlines. The number of Palestinians now has increased in terms of unfortunate deaths of Palestinians by Israel to now be 22, not 20, as we read in our headlines and in our news. And the unfortunate side of this, aside from the deaths, is that they're mostly women and children, which has transpired over the course of 2 days now. Well, Palestinians have held a funeral procession for two more people killed in a fresh Israeli attack in the occupied West Bank. Regime forces resorted to live fire on Palestinians during a raid on the city of Jenin. According to eyewitnesses, during the raid, Israeli snipers took position on the rooftops, while others forcefully entered a number of homes and destroyed people's property. The Israeli forces then closed the main streets in the town while laying siege to a number of homes. The regime has stepped up attacks across the occupied territories over the past months. More than 100 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank so far this year. Of course, Lorna Ramallah, Monica Ndil, says Palestinians are desperately waiting for the international community to take action against Israel for its crimes.
Every day, Israeli forces raid Palestinian areas, arrest people, destroy their homes, confiscate their lands, and kill people in cold blood. Not all of these Palestinians that are being killed by the Israeli forces are Palestinian fighters or members of the resistance groups. Many of those who are murdered are civilians, children, women, elderly. But at the end of the day, the international community is only issuing statements of condemnation, not more than this, calling the Israeli forces to stop their illegal, or even they didn't describe the practices as illegal. They are only demanding the Israeli forces to stop measures of aggression against the Palestinians. So the Palestinians do not expect anything from the international community or even the United Nations or even the Arab states. What the Palestinians really want, not a statement of condemnation, they want a serious position from the world to force the Israeli regime to stop their crimes. But knowing at the end of the day, as long as the Israeli regime is backed by the American administration, then they would continue to act as a state above the law. They would continue to keep reminding the Palestinians that they are under occupation and that they don't have the right to fight till the till ending this Israeli occupation.
The Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has received an invitation to attend next week's Arab League summit in Saudi Arabia. Saudi King Salman has invited Assad to attend the summit as the body agreed to bring Syria back into its fold after years of suspension. Assad says the summit, set to be held in Jeddah, will enhance joint Arab action to achieve shared aspirations. The invitation was made one day after Riyadh and Damascus announced that they would reactivate their diplomatic missions. Riyadh cuts its diplomatic ties with Damascus in the wake of the foreign-backed militancy in Syria in 2011. The rapprochement between Syria and Arab states come as the Syrian armed forces have managed to score victories against foreign-backed militants. Iran's new ambassador to Syria has highlighted the importance of establishing a joint bank and eliminating the U.S. dollar from trade transactions between the two countries.
The establishment of a joint bank and the removal of the dollar from financial trades and also eliminating custom taxes and tariffs are two major issues. Also, the establishment of joint insurance companies will provide a ground for investment and economic growth in the two countries.
Akbari described the developments as positive steps toward enhancing cooperation between private sectors. He says such opportunities will pave the way for the private sector to bring in capital and to encourage investment. Tehran and Damascus have agreed to expand bilateral cooperation, particularly in the economy and trade, following a historic visit by President Ebrahim Raisi to the Arab country last week. Foreign ministers of Syria, Turkey, Iran, and Russia have emphasized their commitment to Syria's territorial integrity and the fight against all forms of terrorism, separatism, and extremism in the country. The ministers underscored the significance of increasing international aid to the war-torn country, including facilitating a safe, dignified, and voluntary return of Syrian refugees to their homeland. They also agreed to design a roadmap in order to promote relations between Syria and Turkey. Officials announced the news in a statement following their quadrilateral meeting in Moscow. Chief of General Staff of Iran's Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Bagheri, has met with the Sultan of Oman, Haytham bin Tariq, in Muscat to discuss security cooperation. During the meeting, the Omani ruler and the Iranian general also discussed regional issues. Sultan Haytham called for mutual defense collaboration and said that he would pay a visit to the Islamic Republic in the near future. General Bagheri, for his part, stressed the importance of joint efforts by the two neighbors to boost regional security. He said the future world order would be based on multilateralism, adding that the global shift of power from the West to the Asia center is imminent. Bagheri held talks with other Omani officials during his visit to the country that ended on Tuesday. Meanwhile, here in the capital, Tehran, the top Iranian general, Mohammad Bagheri, on Wednesday addressed an international conference on the new world order geometry. He said Iran's Islamic revolution has been one of the pillars to fight the U.S. hegemonic agenda around the globe. The major general highlighted U.S. failures in several regional countries, including Afghanistan and Iraq, despite spending billions of dollars on its military adventurism. He said even Washington's traditional allies do not trust it anymore, adding that the U.S. has been left isolated more than ever. The top Iranian general also said that the U.S. power has diminished significantly over the past decades. The two-day conference has brought together thinkers, officials, and academics from some 37 countries. Topics such as new concepts and the formation of a new world order and its components will be discussed. On to Pakistan, where the former Prime Minister Imran Khan has been remanded in custody for 8 days by an anti-graft court. At least 4 people have been killed in Peshawar as Khan's supporters clashed with police across the country. Another person died on Tuesday. Violent protests erupted when Khan was detained from the High Court, where he had gone to seek bail in multiple cases. The arrest brought thousands of his supporters to the streets across the nation. Nearly 1,000 people were arrested in Punjab alone. The former cricketing superstar has denied all charges against him. He says they are part of an effort by the struggling government to prevent him from returning to power. The drama follows months of a political crisis during which Khan, who was ousted in April last year, waged an unprecedented campaign against the country's powerful military.
The ex-Pakistani Prime Minister was detained on Tuesday afternoon while leaving the Islamabad High Court premises in a stunning turn of events. Khan was arrested by a team of the country's anti-corruption body that was assisted by a large contingent of paramilitary troops when he was making his attendance in 2 cases related to sedition and attempted murder. Khan's graft case is one of over 100 cases registered against him since he was ousted from power in a parliamentary vote in April last year. The former PM has been accusing the government as well as the top military officials of involvement in assassination plot against him, which was denied by both. Just hours before his arrest, Khan said in his last video message that he will prefer to die rather than accept slavery.
I might have been arrested in a false case when this message reaches all of you. The fundamental rights and democracy have been vanished from the country. Whatever happening at the moment is because of this imported government. So it's time for all of you to take to the streets for real freedom of the country.
The government says that Khan's arrest was made in accordance with the law as he was involved in corruption of 119 million British pounds.
Jis waqt ye corruption kar raha tha.
Mr. Khan was doing corruption along with his family and friends when he was the Prime Minister. The embezzled money was deposited in a trust which was registered under Imran Khan and his wife's name. The money should have been deposited in the National Treasury but went into a property which was registered under a trust.
Following the arrest, thousands of Khan's supporters took to the streets across Pakistan to protest their leader's detention. Clashes between police and protesters were also reported in all major cities and towns of the country.
The arrest of the former Pakistani Prime Minister has further fueled the political standoff between the government and the opposition. Experts believe the country's political atmosphere would be more charged and violent in days to come. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
The Manhattan Federal Court has found the former President of the United States, Donald Trump, liable for sexually abusing magazine writer Eugene Carroll in the 1990s. Jurors decided that Trump should reward his accuser $5 million in punitive damages. That includes compensation for defaming Carroll. She has argued that Trump's public denials wrecked her career. The former president says the court decision is a, quote, disgrace. Trump will appeal the verdict. He says the trial is evidence of a, quote, democratic plot to tarnish his political image. Carroll has said that she decided to break her silence in 2017 after rape allegations against Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein prompted scores of women to come forward with accounts of sexual violence by powerful men. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Palestinians say the Zionist regime's siege on Gaza has crippled the enclave's economy. The fishing zone for the Gazans currently extends to only between 11 kilometers and 28 kilometers off the Gaza coast. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of the Electronic Intifada wrote in this regard, "It is early morning, sunny but with a cool breeze. Jihad al-Hissi is busy helping fellow fishers to prepare a boat for a day at sea. There should not be anything unusual about the tasks they perform. Fishers around the world to them all the time. Yet the tension is almost palpable. Jihad 56 is worried that his boat will not return to the port. For 8 months last year, the boat was held by Israeli authorities after its crew ventured a short distance beyond the small zone in which Gaza's fishers are permitted to operate. Being away from the vessel was heartbreaking for Jihad. Feeding our families was very hard during those months," he said, adding, "All we know how to do is in life is fish." Eventually, the boat, named Al-Hajj Rajab, after Jihad's father, was released to him under strict conditions. He was required to pay approximately $5,500 and warned that he may not go further than 3 nautical miles from the shoreline. Jihad fears that the boat could be seized once again at any moment. The Israeli regime authorities have initiated court proceedings in an effort to confiscate the boat permanently. The ordeal began on February 14, 2022. On that day, Jihad's brother, Nihad, was captaining the boat. Nihad and other members of his extended family were lowering their nets into the sea when 3 Israeli regime naval vessels approached them at high speed. The Israelis attacked Nihad and his crew with rubber-coated steel bullets and water cannons. Once they were beside the boat, three Israeli regime commandos jumped on board, screaming and continuing to shoot. Nihad said, "They even used electric shock weapons on us several times. It was the most terrifying and cruel experience of my life," he added. "Not only because I was in danger, but because it was hard to see my sons and nephews injured and in handcuffs." All six fishers, including Nihad, were arrested and brought to Ashdod, a naval base in the occupied territories of Palestine. Later, the fishers were taken to the Erez military checkpoint, which separates the occupied territories and Gaza. They were interrogated before being released in the late evening. The excuse offered by the Zionist regime for its brutality was that the boat was outside the permitted fishing area. Nihad pointed out that it is often impossible to catch enough fish inside the permitted zone. Fishers have to go farther in the hope they will have a large enough daily catch. Otherwise, their activities would not be economically viable. Under the Oslo Accords signed between the Zionist regime and the Palestine Liberation Organization in 1990s, Gaza's fishers may venture up to 20 nautical miles from the shore. The Zionist regime has not respected the accords. The Zionist regime has repeatedly changed the limits applying to fishers. At times, this regime has reduced the zone as little as 3 nautical miles and even banned fishers from going to sea completely for certain periods. While naval attacks on Gaza's fishers are frequent, the court proceedings the Zionist regime has initiated against the Al-Hessi family is regarded as unprecedented. According to Gisha, an Israeli human rights group, the authorities are wrongly trying to invoke provisions of international law. These provisions concern the seizure of enemy ships and, in Gisha's view, should not be applied to civilians. It is deeply ironic that the Zionist regime is posing as a defender of international law in this case. The restrictions the Israeli regime has imposed on fishers and the violence to which this regime has subjected them constitutes collective punishment. That crime is outlawed by the 4th Geneva Convention, a cornerstone of international law. Al-Mizan, a Gaza-based human rights group, has found that the Zionist regime carried out hundreds of attacks on Palestinian fishers in 2022 alone. Such attacks have continued in the first few months of this year. The Zionist regime's seizure of his boat caused major problems for Jihad. As he had no income, his debts mounted. And when the boat was finally handed back to him, it had sustained serious damage. Some of the damage resulted directly from the attack. Other damage resulted from the boat's engine being exposed to the elements during the 8 months it was kept in Ashdod. Repairing it cost approximately $11,000. Jihad also lost nets and other fishing gear that had been cast into the sea just before the attack occurred. Replacing the equipment cost an additional $10,000. Jihad had to borrow heavily so that he could pay those bills. While many fishers have left the profession since the Zionist regime imposed the full blockade on the Gaza Strip in 2007, Jihad is determined to keep plying his trade. He regards it as his duty to do so, as he comes from a family of fishers. He recalls hearing stories that his father told him about working as a fisher in Jaffa. The family hails from that port city in historic Palestine. They moved to Gaza after being uprooted during the Nakba, the 1948 ethnic cleansing of Palestine. Jihad said, "Even when my boat was taken away from me, I insisted on going down to the port in Gaza every morning. Life away from the sea's breeze is unbearable." In the meantime, Wafa News Agency reported, on May 1st, 2023, Israeli regime Navy attacked Palestinian fishermen while sailing off the northwest shores of Gaza City, injuring two and arresting two others. According to the fishermen union committees in the Gaza Strip, two Palestinian fishermen were shot and injured by Israeli regime's Navy's rubber-coated steel bullets, including an injury to the head, while sailing within 3 nautical miles offshore the northwest of Gaza City. Israeli regime Navy troops reportedly surrounded the boat, attacked it with rubber-coated steel bullets and water cannons, shooting and injuring two people. They were taken to hospital for medical treatment. In the meantime, Israeli regime army and bulldozers, on May 1st, infiltrated Gaza borders from the eastern part of Khan Yunis City, in southern Gaza Strip, and razed land in the area. Sources said that 7 Israeli military vehicles, accompanied by bulldozers, raided agricultural land to the east of the town Khaza, east of Khan Yunis, where they leveled land and vandalized Palestinian agricultural properties.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَوْ يُوهُ بِلِيهِ إِسْتَعِينُوا بِالصَّبْرِ وَالصَّلَاةِ.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, Minbar. A lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
The theme that I've been talking about in this majalis is basically to see those who are close to Amir al-Mu'mineen so that we can relate to them, look at them as role models and examples of what is it mean to be Shia of Ali. I would like to talk about a lady, because when we talk about the Shia of Ali, it was not only the men. And this is just one example of a very courageous lady who was among the loyal followers of Amir al-Mu'mineen. And her name was Sauda bint Ammara al-Hamdaniya. She came from Hamdaniya tribe of Yemen. Just to give you a background of the tribe, it was a tribe which was very much devoted to Amir al-Mu'mineen from day one when they became Muslims. Rasulullah sent Amir al-Mu'mineen to Yemen, and this time Amir al-Mu'mineen was able to convince the people in that area, especially the tribe of Hamdaniya. And they all became Muslim at the hand of Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali bin Abi Talib alayhi salatu wasalam. Sauda bint Ammara was a very courageous lady and talented in poetry. She was with her brother in the Battle of Siffin. She joined the brother, and the brother was there commanding actually the contingent of Hamdaniya tribe in the army of Amir al-Mu'mineen. You know, different tribes were divided in different forms. And she was there, and she actually used her talent to boost the morale of her brother and the fighters who were in that group. She used to get up on the camel and recite her poetry. Of course, it's not in a singing type. It's just the simple words. And her lines of poetry became so famous to boost the morale of the soldiers of Amir al-Mu'mineen that even the soldiers of Muawiyah actually had memorized those words, although it was going against them. You know, where she says, Shammir kafa'li abika yabna ammara yawm atti'an wa multaq al-aqran. Get ready like your father or son of Ammara, referring to her brother. On the day of fight when champions meet, وانصر عليا والحسين ورحته واقصد لهند وابنها لهوان. Support Ali and Hussein and his family, and target Hind, the mother of Muawiyah. Target Hind and her son with disgrace. إن الإمام أخ النبي محمد علم الهدى ومنارة الإيمان. The Imam that we have is the brother of Prophet Muhammad. He is the alam, the sign and banner of guidance, and he is the minaret of Iman. فَقُدِ الْجُيُوشِ وَسِرْ عَمَامَ لِوَائِهِ. So lead the armies and go ahead of the flag. قَدَمًا بِعَبْيَزٍ صَارِمٍ وَسِنَانٍ. March forward with shining sword and arrows. The third line is very clear, that this Imam is the brother of Rasulullah. He is alam al-huda wa manaratul iman. He is the flag or the symbol of guidance, and he is the minaret of faith and iman. Years passed. Amir al-Mu'mineen was killed. The peace treaty was signed between Imam Hassan alayhi salam and Muawiyah. And now, the time we are moving forward, Muawiyah is now the absolute ruler of the Muslim world. He had sent one of his very cruel army officer by the name of Ibn Artat to Yemen with a mission of, gathering the tax from them. And he came to Hamdaniya tribe. And this person had kind of very strong hatred towards Ali and Ali. So anyone who loved Ali, he would have a serious problem with them. And so in his process of extracting that, tax from them, he was very cruel. He even killed people, took things without any basis for it. And so the tribe became very concerned. And they said, why don't we send somebody on our behalf to Muawiyah to complain about this officer that he has sent? And amazingly, when the tribe thought about it, they couldn't think of any name more appropriate than the name of Sauda bint Ammara. Because she knew she was a very courageous lady. Even in front of a tyrant ruler, she will be speaking the truth and nothing else. And so you can realize her greatness, and image in these in the tribe. And so she went to Damascus, asked permission to meet Muawiyah. She was given the time. But before she was asked to come in the darbar of Muawiyah, the advisor who was sitting there, they reminded Muawiyah that she is the same lady who was reciting these lines, these words in Siffin. And they repeated the whole, line of poetry that she had. And so when she goes in after the formal, greetings and everything, Muawiyah said, are you the one who is reciting this poetry in Siffin against me? And this is where you see, the courage is not in wielding this sword. It is actually kalimatu haqqin inda imam al-ja'ir, speaking the truth and haq in front of a tyrant ruler. That is the standard of courage. And she responds by saying, Ayyuwallah, ma misli man raghiba anil haqq aw i'tazara bil kidhb. She says, yes, yes, by Allah. A person like me does not turn away from the truth, nor apologizes falsely. Yes, these are my words. And I said, on the basis of haqq in Siffin. So Muawiyah is now asking her, what motivated you to say these words? This is an example for us, not only for our sisters, even for us men here. She very clearly, without any hesitation, says, you are asking me what motivated me to say these words? حُبُّ عَلِيٍّ وَعِتَّبَاعُ الْحَقِّ. This love for Ali and the sense of following the truth and haqq. That was the basis of my, poetry. And so then Muawiyah, after some other discussion, he says, so what is your plea today? Why you have come here today to me? And she says, and I'll quote you the exact words without going into Arabic here. She says, you are now the ruler of the people and control their affairs. And Allah will question you about your duty towards us, the people. You sent to us people who represent your power and might. This Ibn Artat, the army officer who was sent, this Ibn Artat has come to our land, killed our men, taken our property. وَلَوْلَا الطَّاعَ لَكَانَ فِينَ عِزٌ وَمُنْعَةً. And look at her courage now. If it had not been for the sense of obedience, we also have power and ability to resist. فَإِمَّا عَزَلْتَهُ لَأَشْكَرْنَاكَ. Either you dismiss him and we will be thankful to you. وَإِمَّا لَا فَعَرَفْنَاكَ. And if you don't do that, we will know you. You're talking to somebody who is now considers himself to the emperor. Nobody talks in front of him. And Muawiyah didn't take it lightly. He says, you are threatening me on the basis of your tribe? By Allah, if I intend, I can send you, tie you on the camel and send you back to Yemen to that same officer, and he will implement the judgment against you. Sauda bint Ammara at that time was silent. According to one narration, she actually softly cried. And then extempore, she recited two lines of poetry. She says, صَلَّ الْعِلَاحَ عَلَىٰ رُوحٍ تَضَمَّنَهُ قَبْرٌ فَأَصْبَحَ فِيهِ الْعَدْلُ مَدْفُونَ. قَدْ حَالَ فَالْحَقُّ لَا يَبْقَ بِهِ ثَمَنًا فَصَارَ بِالْحَقِّ وَالْإِيمَانِ مَقْرُونَ. She says, may Allah shower blessings on a person that when he was contained by the grave, justice was buried with him. Just look at the thought. Sallallahu ala ruhin tadammanahu qabrun fa'asbaha al-adlu madfuna. That may Allah send the blessings on the person that when he was buried, justice was buried with him. قَدْ حَالَ فَالْحَقِّ. He pledged to Allah that he would not sell justice at any cost. And so he became فَصَارَ بِالْحَقِّ وَالْعِيمَانِ مَقْرُونَ. He became one with the truth and the faith. He knows who. But Muawiyah asked her, whom are you referring to in these words? And she says, I am remembering Ali bin Abi Talib.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Adi Ali. حكيم متين غفور
قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
According to the American media, some U.S. Republican senators and Donald Trump's former strategic allies are not sure that he can succeed in the 2024 election due to his poor personality and performance and the damage done to his image following the criminal charges against him and revelations of the Congressional Investigation Committee about the 6th of January 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. New York Post has covered this story and tells us more. Former Attorney General of the United States William Barr has sounded the alarm, saying Donald Trump will create chaos and a horror show if he is elected president in 2024. Speaking at an event in Cleveland, Ohio on Friday, 5th of May, former Attorney General William Barr said Donald Trump lacked the discipline to achieve the policies that he is promising. William Barr, who served as the U.S. Attorney General in the administration of former Presidents George H.W. Bush and Donald Trump, said, "If you believe in his policies, what he's advertising as his policies, he's the last person who could actually execute them and achieve them." William Barr added, "Trump does not have the discipline." He also said that Donald Trump lacked the mental capacity to set priorities or think strategically. William Barr continued, "Trump doesn't have the ability for strategic thinking or setting priorities." He described Donald Trump's conduct as what one would expect to see in a horror movie. William Barr said, "It is a horror show when he's left to his own devices. And so, you may want his policies, but Donald Trump will not deliver Trump policies." Barr noted the only goal that Donald Trump is capable of achieving through his divisive rhetoric and actions is to create division, to wreak havoc, and deliver chaos in society. William Barr added, "He will deliver chaos and, if anything, lead to a backlash that will set his policies much further back than they would otherwise would be." In Trump's inaugural speech in January of 2017, he promised to end the American carnage by painting a bleak picture of a divided, dysfunctional nation that he alone could fix. Donald Trump, who is now seeking a second term in office in 2024, has been promoting himself in U.S. society as a successful leader and defender of U.S. values and a supporter of American heroes, who is himself being attacked mercilessly by those who aim to defame our heroes, erase our values, and indoctrinate our children. He said, "We're now in the process of defeating the radical left, the Marxists, the anarchists, the agitators, and the looters." In the meantime, Trump has been described by some of the officials who have worked alongside him in the past as a nasty, cruel, and violent person that is even feared by most of his own party members. According to experts in sociology and psychology, Donald Trump's dangerous rhetoric provides his extreme followers with fodder to exert violence in society. Newsweek magazine has also covered the same story and tells us more. Donald Trump has hit back at William Barr after the former Attorney General of the United States predicted it would be chaos and a horror show if Trump is re-elected as president. Writing on Truth Social, Donald Trump accused William Barr of being a weak and slovenly man who didn't want anything to do with the rigged election claims. Barr resigned as Attorney General in December of 2020 after Donald Trump continued to falsely suggest that the election he lost to Joe Biden was stolen from him due to widespread voter fraud, even after William Barr publicly stated that the U.S. Justice Department had found no evidence to back up Donald Trump's claims. In response to William Barr's comments, Donald Trump attacked his one-time ally and the work he did as Attorney General and suggested he actually fired William Barr from his position in late 2020. Donald Trump wrote, "Bill Barr was a weak and slovenly man who was ill-equipped to be Attorney General because he was literally in fear of the radical left Democrats and all they were threatening to do to him. He did fine with Russia, Russia, and Russia, but it should have been gotten rid of as a made-up Democrat con job much faster." He said William Barr was most afraid of anything having to do with the rigged election because he knew that it was this subject more than any other that the Democrats did not want to even think about. Trump added, "They got away with murder, so no more discussions with the possibility of getting caught. They wanted it over. I got very tough with William Barr and pushed him hard to do his job, but he just couldn't overcome his fear of the radical left. He was useless. I nicely fired him. He's now a soundbite." This is not the first time that William Barr and Donald Trump have exchanged verbal blows. In a March 2022 interview with NBC News to promote his memoirs, William Barr described how Donald Trump showed a detachment from reality post-2020 election, including accepting a conspiracy theory that Dominion voting machines were used to rig the ballots. William Barr said he was willing to accept anything, no matter how fanciful, as long as it didn't make him a loser in the election. William Barr added that Donald Trump was the maddest I've ever seen him when he handed him his resignation letter over what then Attorney General described as incorrect election fraud claims. In response, Donald Trump said, "William Barr crumbled under pressure and bowed to the radical left, but not accepting the false election claims." Donald Trump also claimed that it is incorrect and a total fabrication that William Barr handed in his resignation and that he was the one to ask for it. American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story. Former President Donald Trump's fellow Republicans, including even some of his strongest allies, want him to stay away from the 2024 presidential race amid his legal troubles. Senate Republicans, including members of leadership, say Donald Trump should stay out of the 2024 Senate primaries in order to avoid a repeat of last year's disappointing midterm elections. Trump, who announced his presidential campaign in November, has become the first former U.S. president to face criminal charges after a grand jury voted to indict him in New York over a hush money payment made to the film actress Stormy Daniels during the 2016 presidential election. Republican lawmakers fear he will mire the GOP candidates in debates over his pet issues such as election fraud and defunding the Department of Justice, instead of issues that matter to the American voters such as the economy, the rate of inflation, and health care. They also worry that Donald Trump's endorsements, again, will be more driven by how the perceived candidate's loyalty to him and his agenda than on the electability in November. Senate Republican Whip John Thune said it will be better if Donald Trump stayed out of the way. Senator Lindsey Graham also said, "If I were Trump, I'd focus on my own election, but I doubt if he'll take that advice." Many GOP lawmakers believe that Donald Trump hurt Republican chances in Arizona, Georgia, and Pennsylvania by endorsing candidates from Republicans in Washington, did not view as candidates with the best chance of winning the general election.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ideal University Student brings change in thinking and reality of the society and world. The following is part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in a meeting with university students and representatives of student associations in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on April 18th, 2023. If we hand over the country's facilities, its production facilities, its factories, all these things that were operating smoothly, if we hand them over to the government will not be able to manage production facilities and large production companies. The government cannot do that. There will be corruption. These things have frequently happened over the past few years. The only solution to these problems has been privatization. There truly was no other option, and this was not done suddenly. It took place based on thinking, studies, and predictions, and after hours of discussion. Yes, I know that the expectation I had from privatization has not yet been fulfilled, but good things have been done. When you say that the government enterprises that have been given to the private sector will not return their dollars to the government, such a thing is not true. The ones that are not returning dollars are the organizations that are currently operating under the government. This is a problem that I myself recently told the government officials. I have repeated this and brought it up several times.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
It is the government enterprises that do business and deal with foreign countries that do not return their dollars to the central bank. So this is not related to the private sector. Of course, the private sector has its own problems. It needs to be supervised and it requires attention and observance. These things are required and there is no doubt about this. Regarding the economic meeting of the heads of the executive branches, first of all, this is not a permanent matter. It is temporary. Secondly, the meeting is for special purposes. I identified four issues which I told them. One is the issue of the budget, arranging the budget and reforming the budget structure. Because one of our biggest problems is the issue of the budget structure. And there were three other issues. That was the purpose behind this meeting. Of course, things have not developed as they should have, but shutting things down is not the solution. The solution is to pursue the tasks until they are completed. There are some issues that are a problem due to a lack of agreement among high-level officials. So how do we solve these? The solution is for you to sit together, discuss things, make a unified decision, and take action. This is why a council has been formed.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.